Hi everyone, John Aldridge here with the Aldo podcast already. It's the 13th one. Unbelievable. Flip on it. Just over a year now and we've enjoyed every single one. In partnership, obviously, with the Hotel Anfield. Over the course of last year or so, we've been very lucky to get fortunate to have some fantastic ex-Liverpool players and people who've worked with the club and such. And in the coming year, it'll be more so, hopefully, if it comes to fruition. And today we're joined, in my opinion, by one of the greatest. You know, if you look what Alan did, you know, no other player has done what he's ever done, scored two winning goals in European Cup finals. And he's took for granted a little bit, I think. I'm delighted to have Alan Kennedy with me, Al.
Good to be here.
We've been good friends for a long, long time. Along with, James Pearce and Peter Shrevers, man. We're going to...
And he didn't need any alcohol for it either.
I'm really looking forward to this one. And thanks again to all the sponsors. You know, we've raised some good money over the last year or so for really important charities. But more importantly, Al, how are you?
I'm actually okay, John. I feel it's been a busy weekend. I was helping the Jamie Carragher Foundation out on Friday night, doing a little presentation and whatever, and meeting people and greeting whatever. But it was lovely, and I had a good weekend. I was in Preston on the Sunday, and
you do travel a lot, don't you, now? It's like a fart in the pocket.
He's everywhere.
He just loves traveling. And he's tough, man.
And I'm here today.
No, but all joking apart, you know, we do a lot, you know, for charity, which we don't go out and tell people, do we? John, we just do it, don't we?
I think it's so nice. Sorry, James. It's nice to give something back. To people, and this is what we're trying to do. You know, some people say they take this, they were on this type of money back in the 1980s. We weren't. Can I just tell you? You know what it was like. We weren't on that type of money, but give something back.
We're in a position. You know. To be able to do so with the people following you from. But whilst we're on that, just before we go on, I've just got to mention Ron Yates quickly, because we were good friends with Big Ron.
Oh.
You know, he's passing away, as it is all, but himself and his family have struggled massively for a long time now with dementia, Alzheimer's, what Ron had, and it was horrible for everyone in the family. And we just want to give our heartfelt, you know, sympathy to all the family. And myself and Alan and all the ex-players will be at his funeral, giving massive backing to Ron and the family. So all I have to say, what a man, not just a footballer, what a person, what a colossus he was called. He was bigger than that. Sad day for Liverpool Football Club and everyone concerned. One of the greatest captains we've ever had.
He was as great off the pitch as he was on the pitch. He was a leader, and even with us, we looked up to him. Well, we had to look up to him because he was 6'6", like, you know, but he was a leader.
Yeah.
He was a born leader of people, and I loved it. I can tell
just a quick story before we move on to that. I'm sorry to sidetrack you, but that was important that we had to get that in, isn't it, really? But I remember when I signed for Liverpool, and Ron was the chief scout at the time. And obviously, the part of watching me and get me, you know, signed for Liverpool. And the day I was getting put in front of the world, you know, in front of the media, was a Monday. But on the Saturday, when I came home from my last game from Oxford, there was a homecoming for me, a surprise homecoming in Hunts Cross Snooker Club. And all the families were there. And what happened again that night, there was a big free-for-all. Someone upset someone. And I wasn't happy at all. It was bad. So my dad dragged me out, and then so there's a window there, and in temper, a little window in the door, I've gone like that, but I didn't know there was a wall behind it.
Oh.
So it broke my hand, just scratches and whatever with the window, but it broke my hand. And then my dad took me to the Royal on a Saturday night. That wasn't good. Because a long story short, says, you broke your hand, we've got to put in plaster. So put in plaster. And on the Sunday, I cut the plaster off. I said, I can't go through. my debut in Anfield. Anyway, cut a long story short, I bandaged it up, got to Anfield, going to meet the media and talk, you know, what you have to do on your debut in front of the cameras. As I walked through, do you remember the old reception?
Yeah.
The doors used to slide in the old reception.
Yeah.
As I go in there, there's doors there sliding. And standing there, the secretary there, standing there, is Big Ron. And he went, "Ah, John, Jesus, son, it's great to see you." And he went,
"Oh, big handshake."
I thought, "Oh, no." And I can't blank him. I've gone, "You've got to just take this one." And I've gone like that. And he's screaming at me. And I've gone, "Oh, for fuck's sake." It was horrendous. Loved the man. Anyway, loved the man. Back to our other.
Can I just ask, John, how many games did you miss because of a broken hand?
No.
Okay. All right. I was the same.
I'd
broken my wrist in 1981. So.
You just bandage it up and get on with it. Just be careful on the pitch, don't you? That you don't hit someone.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's what Bob Paisley told me. Said you'd be all right, don't worry. It was a European Cup final, you see. So.
Oh, there you go.
Serious. Broken wrist.
You never told me that one. Yeah. Something else you haven't told me, innit?
Okay, right, okay.
And something else, just before we forget it, Anne, it was your big birthday the other day. So I know it's a little bit late, but happy belated birthday to your
70th
birthday. All right. You look much better, much younger than John as well. How do you do it, you know?
How do I do it?
Yeah, how do you do it?
Travel. Yeah, cream on the face and whatever. Yeah. I don't shave. Like you.
CBD
oil. Oh, yeah.
To get that one in.
You can only mention it if they pay a sponsorship, right?
and the odd alcoholic drink. The odd one.
Yeah.
Okay, because
it's good for you, Al. A few pints does you no harm, mate.
Yeah, but my doctor's listening.
Yeah. What have you made of the start of a new era at Liverpool?
I have loved the way they've played.
Yeah.
I really honestly have loved. They've upped the ante. All the players have upped the ante. They've gone out there, and I have to say, some of the football has been fantastic. Really, really enjoyed it. And it's been a pleasure watching it. It has been a pleasure watching it. And then some people will be like, picking the bones out of certain performances, like, you know.
The Forest game one.
The Forest game.
It was very good. Yeah.
Everybody thought, because you don't want the players to be thinking it's easy and they've won three games out of three and all of a sudden, like, they'll come to Forest or they'll beat them and whatever. You've got to have the right attitude.
Yeah.
And you've got, and consequently, I would say going back to 1978, 79, the first season that I had at Liverpool, I learned so much from people like Ronnie Moran and Joe Fagan and people off the pitch rather than on the pitch. They were all leaders on the pitch.
Yeah.
But like sometimes it didn't go according to plan. And that's what you've got to get your shoulders back and you've got to say to yourself, right, okay, make sure it's right for next time.
Yeah.
You can't, 50,000, 60,000 people, you can't let them down week in and week out.
But at the same time, like Ronnie Moran was the bad cop, Roy Evans was the good cop.
Yeah.
But even in a really good performance, there was never a 10 out of 10 satisfaction. he wasn't satisfied. The manager would come away and say, "Ronnie, just give him a little nudge that one.
Yeah.
A little nudge that one," whatever. And if he didn't do it after the game, he'd done it in training the next day. That's brilliant, that.
Yeah.
That's brilliant, that. And to be fair, I took Ronnie for granted a little bit because I thought he was like on my case all the time. But it's not till later on in life you realise how good he was. But we had some fantastic coaches.
They were fantastic.
They're coming from Newcastle, but you had some really good coaches. But Liverpool at the time, Newcastle had a really good team, but Liverpool were just Kevin Keegan and with them and, you know, the team that you went into.
That's right.
It was a tremendous team.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Are you still playing the walking football?
The answer is yes.
Because you were playing for England, weren't you? Going back a few years at walking football.
Was I?
I believe so.
I think I might have been part of the England setup and whatever, like, you know, but I don't think I'd. Because I could put that to me two caps that I've got for playing for England. I could have three now, or four or five, whatever. I think the important thing from my point of view was to keep on trying to play. Trying to play. And as we talked about Ronnie Moran a few moments ago, but he's still in my head. And he keeps telling me, you know, come on, you should be better than that. You know, you know. But walking football, we've played it a few times, haven't we, John?
And it's, we actually went to Portugal to play. We did. We played out there. It was great crack, yeah.
But it's great. It's a way of exercising. And I'm not saying I'm looking at you two, that you look a little bit out of fitness wise, you know, you're struggling, like, you know, but it is a great way of keeping fit.
Yeah.
So I go down to the Anfield Sports and Social Club every Monday and every Friday.
Bill Bygrove's.
Bill Bygrove takes the coaching side of it. And you know,
is that just the love of the game, is it, as well? Because you, as a player, you went on into your 40s, didn't you?
Yeah. I played local football and some good teams that are not still playing. I love playing. I think it was about 43, 40, 44 before I said, that's it, I've had enough.
Alan, yeah. I have to say, I remember the first time I ever played with Alan, it was like the ex-players in Mauritius in a tournament, then you had a holiday after. He was one moaning bastard. Oh, we're playing this and you want to win. He's a win. And I'm bad. And he's shouting at us, and we're all like 46, 47. We've got nothing but a jolly up. You want to win, but he's terrible.
I played in a charity game down south of Alan a few years ago, and obviously he's at left back. I got brought on at left midfield.
No chance.
And when the ball went out of play, he came up to me, and I thought he might like say, you're doing really well, like a bit of encouragement. And he said, are you honestly this bad? I went, what? He said, Is this you on a good day, or
can I just say, right, okay, it stems all from Ronnie Moran.
I can see that.
Hang on, and Ray Kennedy, and Graham Souness, and a few others, they all criticised the left back. I was the weakness in the team, okay, for everybody. But we won things.
Yeah.
That was the thing about it. We ended up winning things. They wanted to make me a better footballer. Yeah.
And did that criticism fire you up?
Yeah.
Because some players go the other way, don't they? If you criticise them, they go to pieces.
Who goes the other way?
I think this day and age, that's relevant.
Maybe in this day and age.
It has been. You know, in our day and age, there was probably a few, but the mentality, you know, in the older players, we was very strong.
You had to be, because
go back to running around. And other people from other clubs were the same. You had to be mentally strong. Unfortunately, the players today are brilliant players, but I question some of the mentalities, you know, what Alan said.
But that's what it was built on, John, wasn't it? It was built on not fear, but you can't let the club down. The club was bigger than the player.
Always.
Always, you know. Sometimes it can be slightly the other way around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I just felt as though, right, okay, whatever they say is right, like, you know. And I used to listen to them go, that's not right. But don't say anything. Because that was it, wasn't it? Ooh. Don't say anything. Just
take it in, yeah.
Just go, yes.
But Anne, don't you think that might have something to do with your upbringing as well? You were born in Sunderland, grew up in the northeast of England, you know? How was that as a little kid?
I used to play football for my local school. Mm-hmm. And I used to love playing on a Saturday at morning, and my mother and father used to come and watch me. Mm. And that was their support. They wanted to make sure. But I also had a brother who was in the same team as me.
He was a decent player, wasn't he? Yeah?
He was 10 times better than me. I don't know why Liverpool bought me. They should have bought him because he was a better player than me. But he ended up leaving Newcastle for whatever reason, and I'll tell you the reason now, because of me. They invested, I say, the money in me rather than Keith. Mm-hmm. So Keith was sold to Bury. He went to Bury in those days. Bury were in the third division, I think, in those days. And he had 10 magical years there. He loved every minute of it. That was his standard. That was what, you know, John, we always work when you're at Oxford, you think to yourself, I want to be better than that. I was at Newcastle, I want to be better than that. And you end up at Liverpool. That's the thing. And I loved every minute of it. But Keith pushed me. He pushed me and pushed me all the time. And then when I get to, you know, to Liverpool, it's Ronnie Moran pushing me. Because he was a former fullback as well, who played left back for Liverpool.
So we were going to ask you who your heroes were, but I think you answered that now. So your brother, it was a big influence on
massive,
you.
Massive yeah. influence.
And then he passed you over to Ronnie, basically.
Yeah, and you know, he didn't know Ronnie Moran at the time, but Ronnie stepped in and said, listen, you need a talking to find out how Liverpool play and whatever. Newcastle were basically a long ball team. We had a player called Malcolm McDonald, who played up front, like called John Tudor, Terry Hibbert, all great.
Had some really good players.
Good players, you're right.
Bobby Moncur was the captain, wasn't he?
Yeah, Bob Moncur, great players. But they weren't a team. They were just individual players. And like, we couldn't bond as a team. And all of a sudden, like, you know, they lost a player called Irvin Natras.
Oh, yeah.
You might remember him at fullback. Yeah. Really great talent. Absolutely fantastic. And then they lost me.
Teddy Mack.
Well, that was a few years earlier.
He came to live before you, didn't
he? Yeah. But that. So Newcastle were just a selling team.
You were a Newcastle fan when you were a kid, was you? Yeah. Or Sunderland.
I used to go and watch Sunderland.
Yeah, I thought so.
Because I know. Only because I lived nearer to Sunderland.
Because Roker Park was a proper old-fashioned ground.
It was. It was
two
great,
grounds were great up there.
Really. Brian Clough played there and other great players. I loved the atmosphere. I loved going to watch the game. I loved shouting at players, like, you know, and then they'd be shouting at me about 10 years later, like, you know. But I really felt football was where I wanted to be. Mm. You know, I didn't have any illusions about I was useless at schoolwork and all that and whatever. But I wanted to be a footballer.
And just a little bit more than 50 years ago, when you put it like that, it seems like a long time. You played in the FA Cup final, actually, against Liverpool, which turned out to be Shankly's.
I didn't play. I know what you're saying. I did. I was there. But I didn't play.
How? What was your memories, though, even from the sidelines, you just cried. Yeah.
He's just saying he was shite.
Exactly.
But he wasn't.
I mean, you're lost.
He was on the grass.
Let's just say it wasn't your fault.
He wasn't. Liverpool were just that good out. That's what it was.
Kevin Keegan and people like himself and John Toshack and Brian Hall and all that, they were great players, team players. And that's what Newcastle weren't. Newcastle were not, they were a team of individuals. They were good team, and they got to the final because they produced the performances in the semi-finals, the quarter-finals and whatever. But I felt as though that, you know, I needed to sort of like move on to the next level. And I was getting an England cap. And I'll say that guardedly, because I think it took a few years later that I played for England. But I just felt as though I was creeping into the England setup. as a substitute. And I felt as though, right, okay, what's next? And then, would you believe, in 1976, we played in the League Cup final against, I think it was it Man City? Dennis Stewart.
1-0, overhead kick.
The overhead kick. Hey, well done, well done, yeah. You're older than you look.
Thanks. That's possibly the nicest thing you've ever said about me. But then in August, let's see, what, 1978, I think it was, you joined Liverpool for it was a record, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a British record for a fullback.
What do you mean a record? Do you mean a record player or a record?
That's what I thought you were, but you know. No, 330,000 now. And at the time, it was a lot of dough, mate. It's a lot of dough now, you know. But, you know, at the time for the fullback, you know, so they must have really fancied you, you know.
Well, to get you on board. They had other choices as well, but I must have ticked the box.
Yeah.
And there was a guy called Jeff Twentyman.
Yeah.
And we should always remember his contribution.
Yes.
Because absolutely. Jeff was like one of these amateur guys who went about their business and did a thorough job. Yeah. And I remember him telling me...
Chief Scout,
a little bit later. I remember him telling me a little bit later. He said, Alan, I was given the nod by Bob Paisley to look for a left back. And Joey Jones was the left back at the time. Mm-hmm. And they had problems. Alan Hansen was covering whatever. So they went to watch me play for Newcastle at a lower league level. And they wanted to know, would I raise my game? And I did okay. We drew 0-0 in the pre-season friendly. And, you know, I'm still playing for Newcastle. I was unaware that Jeff Twentyman had actually paid to get into the crowd. He didn't want anybody to know, but psychologically he's not good at that. He's not good at this. He's good at that. He's good at that. Whatever, like likes getting forward and whatever. So he's building up and he went back to Bob Paisley and said, whatever you've got to pay for him. Get in there. He's better than what we got. And that's a good sign from my point of view that he's better than what they had there. But who can replace Joey Jones?
Joey's quite iconic. We know because he was a Liverpool fan. He had all the tattoos.
That's right.
We loved him on the cop. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Joey was 100%.
Without doubt. But he kept getting sent off. And you can't do that because it costs you points.
Yeah, he let his heart rule his head.
That's right,
Joey, he's a great fella, by the way.
And it was 2 points for a win in those days rather than obviously 3 points and whatever. But you know, the actual thought that, and I only had one day to think about it, okay? I didn't even have that long because it was a telephone call to Bob Paisley or the secretary, Peter Robinson, and said, yeah, I'm on my way. And that was it. And can I say, we didn't have a telephone at home. Mm. Honestly, we didn't have a telephone at home.
Yeah.
No mobiles, no nothing, whatever. But, you know, you had to run down or get down to the nearest one. And phoning them up and talking to Bob Paisley and we he had the Geordie accent. It's more of a Durham accent with Bob Paisley. He basically said, yeah, we want you, come down, blah blah. Peter Robinson will do everything for you, and he'll arrange this and arrange that. Like, you know, it was but getting here was just wonderful. You know, just to be in a place where somebody wants you.
Yeah.
I never felt as though Newcastle wanted me to stay. Or they might have offered a little bit more money. They might have offered this. But they were getting £330,000 for nothing. Massive. I never cost them a penny.
Yeah, yeah.
True.
You know, that's why they wanted to get rid of me. Like, you know.
So what was it like walking into that dressing room at Liverpool for the first time? Was it welcoming, daunting?
Well, Terry McDermott, I knew.
Right.
Because he was at Newcastle with me. And I knew a couple of other players from the England under 23s in David Fairclough and one or two others, like, you know. It was only the Scottish people that I didn't really know, like, you know, and we had three.
We had quite a few of them. The top players weren't there. Well,
top players? Yeah. I've never experienced anybody like the three of them. but they were fantastic. They were brilliant, like, you know, and then you get to know them a little bit later. But I never thought I'd be starting a game the first game of the season. I remember it was Queen's Park Rangers, first game of the season, and you're thinking to yourself, and you
2-1, wasn't it?
Was it? 2-1. I thought it was 3 at some point. I thought
it's 2-1.
But it was about winning the game. You know, the crowd were expecting. They were a good team. I'm not being funny, but they had some really, really top.
Jerry Francis.
Yeah. But they had some top class players.
Really good players, yeah.
You know, and we all
felt. Old.
That's right. And we all felt as though that, you know, we will get there, whatever, like, you know. And I remember Ray Kennedy, like, just saying to me, you know, just relax and just be yourself and whatever, like.
Because Ray played just in front of you, didn't he? It was like all cocked. It was like left midfielder come left winger. It was a strange position, but he was so influential within the set.
The goals he scored and the positions he took.
Yeah.
He said,
"Great player.
I don't want the ball to feed. Put it in the air, and I'll." He was more or less like a centre forward.
Bought him as a centre forward, and then he changed. What a remarkable player, by the way, wasn't he?
So rather than play, let's just say 4-4-2, it was 4-3-3, because he would be up on the left hand side,
right.
And even his I call him replacement, Steve Highway, was capable of doing exactly what he did. You know, a bit more on the ball and whatever, like, you know, and I thought. These can play a little bit. And I'm going. And Alan Hansen, because he was my roommate straight away, because nobody else would go with him. And he used to say, he said, "Alan, just if you see a red person, okay, with a red top on, just pass to him." And I went, I saw more in the crowd than I did on the pitch. But I was learning about my football again.
Yeah.
I'd never learned it in Newcastle. I'm not having a go at the coaches, but I hadn't learned that. Just to give the tiny simple ball, little ball there, little ball here. Graham Souness coming all the way to get the ball. You know, creating space behind for Dalglish, things like that. It was just, mind-boggling. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
This is the first part of the show. There's plenty more to come with Alan Candy, James and Peter. You know, look forward to the second half of the show coming soon. This is the Aldo Meets podcast, part 2, with myself, Alan Kennedy, James Pearce, and Peter Driversman. We were talking before, Al, about the QPR game, your debut. And I was just looking here, and I know, obviously, no Liverpool teams from the mid-60s. No. The back four was Phil Neal, Tomo, Emily News, I love them all of them.
Yeah.
And then you say, that's not bad to be in, you know, in that company, is it, your first day? You know,
I was somewhere there.
You know what I mean? But, you know, we talked about the game before. Obviously, you're nervous. You went on to win 2-1, but talking about Bob Paisley, was it that game when he joked at half time when you 1-0 down?
No, he wasn't joking. He actually.
Tell the story, because I've heard on the dinner circuit from him, but it's a great story.
Like, Bob had paid out all that money. And it wasn't him personally, but it was the football club. And they expected I was going to be the finished article. But, like, I was learning things from players, either in my position, you know, whether it was, like, Alan Hansen, you know, Clay mentioned Alan Hansen there, but, like, and I was thinking to myself, I've got a lot to live up to here. Because Liverpool were a great team before I joined them. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I'm supposed to strengthen it. I'm supposed to be the best, hang on, left back in the country. And they've paid out a lot of money for me. And even in the warm-up, because we only went out at 10-3.
That's right.
Yeah. In those days, you know, for the 3 o'clock kickoff, went out at 10-3, and I was shooting the ball at Ray Clements. You know, I kept hitting the cop. the cop were going up. They were ducking.
To get past Ray, you'd have to put in the top corner anyway. Yeah. You had no chance of scoring against Ray.
But he didn't. He took it so seriously. Yeah. Everybody took it so seriously. Yeah. You know, and the game was important. QPR just finished, I think they finished second the year before. And they were a great team. I had some good players. But, like, so I remember going out there, and Bob will have his instructions, and Ronnie Moran would be at you and telling you what to do and whatever. So I think it was either 0-0 or one apiece at half time. So I've gone off the pitch, down the little steps, up the 10 steps.
Yeah, to get to the dressing room.
To get the dressing room. And then the dressing room's on the left-hand side. Who's standing there? Bob Paisley. And he just says, Alan! In his type of voice, like, Alan, come here. And he looked at me and he says, I think they shot the wrong Kennedy in 63.
such is a tough school to learn from, you know what I mean? But people that take that the wrong way. But
my reaction was to say, thank you. I said, thank you. I thought he was giving me a compliment. I didn't know he was saying, if you don't, I'm going to get Joey back.
What was Bob like to play for? Because obviously players who spanned the Shankly and the Paisley era, obviously he talked about Shanks was this amazing orator and great speeches and stuff, but Bob was a different type of character.
Bob was very quiet. You know, he said, I'll let my team do the talking. Okay. And he generally picked the right team. But he picked the same team as what he did last week.
Yeah.
And the week before, because he didn't want any change. And if anybody came in, you know, he didn't look at the opposition and say, right, okay, we'll go 4-3-3 rather than 4-4-2. We didn't say we'll do this and whatever, like, you know.
That was the Liverpool way, though, wasn't it? With Shanks, because, you know, when you played for Liverpool, the team was set in stone. If you won, it stayed the same.
Yes.
You know, you'd have to wait for your opportunity for a player to have a nightmare, a couple of nightmares, or be injured, then you get in, and then he's got to fight. That's just the way it was. It was built built on that. Perhaps other teams were the same, but that was Liverpool way from when Shanks came in.
Yeah.
And then Bob had to take it over, didn't he?
And Bob took it over and didn't change anything.
Yeah.
But he did change the personnel, because your Tommy Smiths of the world and your Ian Callaghans were then moving into another, you're moving into another era.
Yeah.
And you've bought your Dalglish for 440,000.
Yeah.
You've lost your Kevin Keegan, you know, your front runner, you lost your John Toshack, but you've got Dave. Yeah. So they wanted to go like for like. So with the players they brought in, they said, okay, so I fit into the way they played. And if you don't, then you're out the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that particular season, I think 78-79, I played 37 league games. I had a bit of an injury, you know, a bit of a problem, like, you know, I'll blame an injury. Mm-hmm. It was probably like they didn't want me to play. But I was establishing myself in the team, and I wanted to be the best left back they've ever had.
Yeah,
that's what I wanted to
Absolutely,
be.
Absolutely, yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not
having
so.
The right attitude. You know, Joey Jones was a great, great player, but they felt as though he sometimes got a bit involved with other people and he wanted to hit them and whatever, like, you know. But the thing about it was, listen, I wasn't like that. I think I got, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe 5 bookings in my career at Liverpool. That's all. So I wasn't a dirty, dirty, dirty player, as you know, some people might describe Joey Jones as. but the thing about it was, I was reliable.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I was reliable, but
And you were a goal threat as well.
Yeah, but
with them,
I was never in the right position. According to Ronnie, Alan, what are you doing there? But I'm scoring goals.
Yeah.
I says, well, I'm there because Dalglish couldn't do it. Dave Johnson couldn't do it. Okay, I'm trying to show them where the back of the net is. You know what it's like, John.
No,
you need people to guide you, don't you? And listen, there was nobody better than, for me, Terry McDermott. I loved him. I loved the way, you know, nobody could ever fathom out how he got from box to box.
Yeah.
He was a box to box player all the time, up there and all down.
Especially when he had about 4 cans every Friday night.
We'll come to that.
You know, he was like a greyhound, one. He was just
he was
an athlete anyway, you know, just not like Steve Nicol in many games.
That's right.
They could just run just all day.
Up and down, up and down, back and
like
forwards.
Athletes, yeah.
And he might only touch the ball 3 times, but he scored 2 goals.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know, some of the greatest goals have been scored by, for Liverpool, scored by him.
And some by you, Alan, but we'll come back to that in a minute.
No, they were in finals and whatever.
let's talk about Paris 81.
Oh, right.
The one of your greatest nights. What was it? 8 or 9 minutes to go.
Yes.
Finals goalless.
Yeah. I didn't realise it was 8 or 9 minutes to go.
Liverpool get a throw in on the left hand side. Ray Kennedy takes it.
Yes.
You decide to make that run and you take the ball on your chest. Talk us through what's going on at that point. What were you thinking?
You're not thinking to score. John's a centre forward. He thinks to score. Mm. I didn't think to score. Okay, I was sort of like in that area to provide. Bob Paisley always said to me, "I want you to stay wide, and I want you to provide the cross or the pass that a player might have a chance of scoring." So that was in the back of my mind. I'd also broken my wrist So I was wearing a bit of a cast on my wrist as well. So everything was slightly against me doing what I did. And when I got into that position, their centre half backed off and backed off. And I said, well, you know, and Ronnie Moran, I can hear his words now going, just go into that position, go into that position.
Space, yeah.
And that's what the position was. You're exactly right. There was space in there. And I thought, I'm going in there. And I went in there and all of a sudden the goalkeeper's gone. What's happening here? And then it's true. David Johnson's shouting at me.
For the cross?
Yeah.
Well, if you look where the dock was, and like, you know, sit there, don't shoot.
Yeah. Don't shoot because he's in a better position. And Ronnie, to be fair to Ronnie Moran, he'd always say, look at players in better positions than you. And I looked at Dave Johnson and I thought, you're not getting it. You're not getting it. You're not getting it. I've burst into the box. I've got the centre half in my wake, and I'm going. The goalkeeper's going like that, like, you know. And the next minute, I've actually hit the ball, connected with it nicely, and it flew in. It didn't matter where it went.
Did you pick the spot or did you smash it?
Did I? Just smash that.
Don't let people know the proper story, mate.
But you know, you hope it's in the general direction of the goal. You hope it's like, you know, you hope the goalkeeper hasn't gone, thanks very much, blah blah blah, whatever. And the ball hit the back of the net. I was off. I was running behind the goal going, if there was a tunnel there, I would have been out of it. I would have been in Paris itself. Like,
what was that night like in Paris? And then what was the homecoming parade like coming back?
Well, everybody
was at the parade.
Were you?
Yeah. I was at the parade. Yeah,
you know, everybody was sort of like jubilant, but it was, you know what Liverpool's like, John? Mm. Just another game. Yeah, but it was the European Cup final. The last game of the season. It's like, and you think to yourself, well, you know, we've done okay, and it doesn't matter about the performance. It doesn't matter who scored the goal. The matter is, you know what it's like. It's about who, you know, did you win the game? And that's what we went. We got on the bus the next day, and I have to say, all of the players, most of the players, were bollocksed.
That's exactly it. It was, wasn't it?
But that's the way they did it. They just said, "You can have a little drink, but make sure when we get off, you have the European, the European Cup." It was a big bloody trophy in those days. You know, it was like that big, and it was fantastic. And then you've got to take it around the city centre. And I can't go into detail what was in that cup.
No, you can.
No, I can't.
You can.
No. I'm just going to tell you, there wasn't a toilet on the bus.
Okay, you can't.
You were right, you can't.
Which brings us nicely to the subject of the difference between the sort of the camaraderie and associated drinking culture of that time versus today. Which of the players, and were you the closest to at the time, particularly also for the off-pitch antics? Which bars would you go to in Liverpool?
Mainly because he lived near where I lived. Terry McDermott was, apart from being a great player, he was a great drinker of alcohol.
I assumed so.
Just beer, though, wasn't it?
Just beer. Just beer. Nobody in my era touched any shorts or any, you know.
Yeah.
And we all loved going to a pub, and can I tell you, Bob Paisley might have known what we were doing. But if you're winning a game,
it's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it's okay. It wasn't okay because you're doing, you know, you shouldn't be. And that's why I have a liver complaint today. Okay. No, my complaint is that I don't have enough beer.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll get you a new one in
will
the
you
next
get me
break.
A new one?
We will, yeah, we will, we will. But before so, then, where's your nickname coming from? The bunny one.
I've got no idea. I've no idea. I don't honestly know.
Barney Rubble's after Flintstones.
Yeah.
In
right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. You're talking about
Barney Rubble. Yeah.
Barney Rubble.
I wonder which other one you think
it
of.
Was from the cop. So the cop used to look at me and used to say, he runs like Barney Rubble.
I can see that now, Al.
You know, but I didn't honestly. And when they used to say Barney, I didn't know it was me. So I used to sort of like go on the pitch, and then Ray Clements would, or it was Bruce Grobbelaar in those days, would put his hand up and whatever. Phil Neal was Zico, was it, and whatever, like, you know. And then it came to me.
In them days, the cop used to sing everyone's name.
Yeah.
You know, just to welcome them and to get
their right.
way back. That's right, yeah.
And then in 84, you did it all over again. You scored. Okay, not
what
for
about 83?
That's one for
see,
James.
See, you haven't done your homework.
James,
you haven't done your
James
homework.
James' job to do the homework.
what happened at 83?
Exactly.
I scored against Man United.
Oh,
that
see.
Wasn't a European Cup final. Yeah, I'm not talking
yeah,
about
oh, exactly. sorry. I thought you were talking about Cup finals. No, sorry, sorry. I beg your pardon. Like, oh, I'll just have another pint. Another pint, please, okay?
To be fair, it's only Man United, you know.
Yeah,
it's
not yeah. Oh, well. Oh, come on. They were a team in those days, man.
Yeah, of course they were, but yeah.
You know, but, like, it wasn't... Like, we always said this, of all the players... It wasn't about who scores the goals. You know, we used to have a ceremony every year. And the ceremony was done by Ronnie Moran. And he'd be presenting your league winner's title.
That's right, yeah.
You
yeah.
remember, John?
Yeah, I do.
And
yeah.
Like, he would go... And he forget half the names, like, you know. He says, Billy or whatever your name is, like, you know.
Just throw them at you. It wasn't like going on the
well,
stage.
That's the
like
way
that.
They
there
were.
You go. Although, yeah, yeah that's yeah, that's yours. You know,
well done. Well
and
done.
Then again, that's all gone now. Next year.
And it was well, over with yeah. in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You're getting your league winner's medal from Ronnie Moran. And he's throwing it at you, going... Put it away.
So how did you come to take the fifth penalty in 84 then? Did you volunteer? Were you told that you're doing it or what?
I had no idea I was going to be involved. No idea whatsoever. And, you know, to this day, I don't know why Joe Fagan or Ronnie Moran picked me. Why didn't Alan Hansen? Why didn't he take one?
Why Alan didn't... was never going to take a penalty.
No. I know that. Yeah. I know that. He was never,
but did,
not brave enough.
We've always joked about it then. Did you put your hands up? Because you were very confident.
No.
So what did Joe ask you? He must have gone round asking.
It was Joe Fagan who said...
Joe was on the pitch having a little smoke, wasn't he?
A different era.
It was in his
what a great fella.
That was his 30th cigarette. So they've been counting on the bench like, no, bloody hell.
Had you practiced penalties
quality.
As a team before the final? Or?
No. We hadn't practiced. But I believe some people were better than others. And I swear, honestly, I believed I would be number 9 or number 10. Mm-hmm. If there was going to be a penalty shootout. And they've obviously skipped a few numbers, and for some reason Joe Fagan said this is the true story. He came to me and he just said, "You all right?" He's a tall guy and he's looking down on me, and "You all right?" I says, "Yeah." And I was. But he was asking me to take a penalty. And I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know. And he said, "Yeah, okay." So I know you eventually you have to give your name to the referee, but he has to submit the names to the referee. And I'm one of them. And I didn't know. I didn't know.
You just tell him that you're all right.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking.
So were you nervous stepping up knowing it's on you to win the European?
Nervous. Cup? I've never been so nervous in my life. Fucking hell. And all the lads are going, excuse me swearing, but they said, fucking hell. It's him. It's him. They didn't call me by name. They called me, it's him.
Yeah, great confidence.
Then you got to tell the lads, and of the viewers, obviously, you had in your mind you fixed where the penalty was
That's
going
right.
to go. So tell them the story, because sometimes players who don't take penalties, they think, it's going there. Go on.
When I was putting the ball down on the spot, okay, my legs were like jelly. And I'm going, where's it going? I was actually saying that to myself. Where's it going? Oh, well, there you go. It's going in that corner.
Bottom right, one at your bottom right, one.
I had the bottom right. I'm a left-footed player. I'm taking the ball away from the keeper and it's gonna go in the bottom right. And then for some reason, your mind just says, put it in the left. John, you know when you get into a position, you sometimes think to yourself, it doesn't matter as long as it goes in. If the goal...
I actually think, and because of penalty, I love penalty and all, Alan's gone bottom right.
Yeah.
But he had a good eye for the target, for goals. He's got some really good goals in his career. And you've actually seen the goalkeeper move slightly, and that's...
Slightly.
So subconsciously, he's gone bang there.
Yeah.
I think you're putting yourself down there a little bit. It was a great penalty.
Yeah, but it's the last second.
Yeah.
You're running up to take the shot.
Yeah.
And you see him moving slightly to the right. You're going... You know, and then you open your body up and you know, you give yourself a choice. You know, it could have quite easily gone in the bottom right, but it went in the top left. And when it hit the back of the net, I promise you now, I went, get in. You know, I jumped, I did this, like, you know, and I went away to the right hand side and then I looked at all the Liverpool players, and they were aghast. They were going. They were just like,
he scored.
Nobody expected anything. I promise you. I know Alan Hansen and Lawrenson and a few others like were going, he's never going to score. The odds were against me. Okay, they were against me. Whatever, but it's. When that ball hit the back of the net, I promise you, the greatest moment of my life, of anybody's life, honestly, it was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I could not believe how proud I felt and how good I felt about the whole thing. Like, nothing could take it away.
Bigger than that in life.
No, there isn't. No, there isn't.
But I think on that note, that's a great way of ending the second part of the show. It's quality stories there from Alan. So we'll be back with the final part just after the break. Hello, this is Old Or Meat podcast again for the final part with Alan Kennedy, James Pearce, and Peter Shriversman. I'm fucking getting good at that.
I know. That's it. We've cracked it. 1 year in. Well done.
Can you spell it?
No. It took me a year actually to get it sorted. I just want to talk quickly about another one. And you don't get the recognition that you deserve for the goals you scored. And, I think it just takes for granted. But a manager you played under, who was a lovely, lovely man. You know, he won the League Cup and European Cup and the league, you know, with us. Joe Fagan.
Yeah.
The quiet man, basically. And you won two caps for England, I think, when he was there as well. But you know, what's your thoughts of Joe? He's up there and
he's up there with the best. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
But in some ways, people said he was a quiet man.
Oh, well.
You know.
To the media. That's what I mean, to the media. People on the outside, yeah.
He'd get annoyed with players and he'd tell them straight, you're not doing it. You're this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And you're, and he was quite a tall guy. And you're going...
He was hard as nails, by the way.
I believe so. Bare knuckle boxing and whatever. we heard the stories.
Big time.
But he was... The thing about it was, he got on well with every player. Whereas you might look at, say, Ronnie Moran, who sometimes antagonised, but... They were both getting the best out of their players. That's what the deal was. Mm. Now, you could pay a lot of money for me, Kenny Dalglish, or whatever, but it's how you treat them. And they absolutely treated us as fairly as anybody else, whether you were Kevin Keegan or whether you were somebody else. Massive name, whatever. They were all the same. They just wanted you to win the game, and that was it. Winning was everything, you know. Yeah. It should have been on the board. Winning is everything, and I remember going into the dressing room. What I think maybe my first game, and I'm thinking to myself, What have I joined here? They're all like, up for it. They're all ready. And I've never seen this before when I was at Newcastle. And even, even the people who weren't so much involved in the playing, they were getting involved as well. And they were saying, come on, you've got to do this. You've got to do that. We had one sub in those days.
Yeah.
And you've got to make sure you get the right sub, haven't you? Mm-hmm. It was David Fairclough generally.
Yeah.
He played in some probably different positions that he's never played before. But the point is, that's what it was all about. It was all about the team. And the chairman was brilliant, John Smith. If I remember the name rightly.
Yeah, you didn't. You didn't see it. You only came down to dressing room to shake hands before games.
That's right. But you knew what it was all about, Joe.
Yeah.
You knew the history. You knew what it was all about the people out there that was keep seeing that, whether they were in the cop or whether they were in the Anfield Road end or whatever.
But also, you mentioned there the dressing room, you looking around and like from out from. The great team that I played for, Alan played for, you look around the dressing room, this Kevin Keegan or Kenny or Jockey Anton or Graeme Souness or all these players, Emily News, and you look and you're going, and they're right, and then you come on, gone, and other team, you're always doing that like as you're going out, but in that dressing room, you're talking about like 15 minutes before the start of the game, before you went out, it's just like they were so focused, man.
They were focused when they went down the tunnel. That's what switched them on, touching the sign and then going down and said, right, okay, this is what we're here for. I can't remember anybody mentioning, let's say, money.
Yeah.
Nobody mentioned money about how much we were on.
It's winning.
To win the game, to whatever, like, you know. Or, you know.
Billy Bonus, that one. But the main thing was just to get the points. Didn't care about the money.
About 30 quid a win or something like that. Like, you know.
It's a bit more than that. It's 400 quid than that.
Yeah. But you didn't care. Yeah. You were representing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The whole area.
Yeah.
You're representing, you know, all the people that paid their money.
Well, that come down from Shankly. That's what Shankly got across. Yes. That was one of his early ones that Shankly got across.
Yeah.
So after 7 years of this unbelievable time, was it five league titles, four league cups, two European cups, when you left Liverpool in 85, you signed for Sunderland, was that difficult? How did that come about in terms of leaving Liverpool?
I didn't personally want to leave. But there was another player taking my place. That happens in football.
Yeah.
You know, it happened to you, it happened to me,
Jim Beglin at the time?
Yeah, Jim Beglin. Yeah. Jim was younger than me and probably fitter than me at the time. And maybe I got a bit blasé about it. Like, I'm here for the rest of me time.
I've got to just interrupt there, Al, because I was part of one of the reasons why Alan left Liverpool.
Oh yeah,
is that right? Yeah,
the last game.
I think I'll have another drink.
It was going so well.
The last game Alan played.
Oxford.
And nearly, I think it was Oxford away, and it was we had a good team, but we had physically, you know, they were at it, our team and all, and I scored the first goal to make it 1-0. Then we went 2-1 behind. And then the last minute, a ball goes over the top. So Alan turns and I'm chasing Alan.
And he's shouting at me. You were shouting at me.
I'm going to get you. The next minute, Bruce is in goal. And he's come out there. He wants the ball on his foot. And Alan just put the ball where he should have been.
Yeah.
And it's an own goal.
Yeah.
That was his last touch.
Two apiece.
Your last touch for Liverpool.
That was his last.
All right. Yeah.
I'm not proud.
What are you mentioning for?
Sorry, mate. I had to get it in because, you know, we've laughed about that for the donkeys he's me and Alan. But yeah, that was Alan's. Unfortunately, that was the last game. But then, Alan's right because the change of the guard with Liverpool. You know, you've seen it over the years.
New manager,
Ronnie Wheel and Jim Beglin. You know, Nico was coming in.
Yeah,
and Neely, AK, and other players were going out. When that was the sort
that's
of
right.
Time
yeah, it was out with the old and in with that's the it, mate, in yeah. with yeah. the new. The thing, Graham Souness had left a year earlier or 8 months. He'd gone there, and you know, but. You know, you have to change things around to get the best out of the team. And to be fair to Kenny, he put the team first and said, we're getting the youngster in, you know, Jim. And, you know, and unfortunately, like, whatever, a year and a half later, he ends up breaking his ankle or something like that.
You went to Sunderland, didn't you?
Sunderland. I went to Sunderland.
I didn't realise you played for so many. You played quite a few teams then.
I didn't play for that many teams. For goodness sake, how many have you got written down?
There is quite a few.
Scott,
Belgium, Grantham, Wigan, Cole, Enfield, Wrexham, Morgan.
Hang on. These are all lower league teams, okay, right?
So, Garston Woodcutters.
They did put in a bid.
Good agree, personal terms.
But they said to me, you have to pay us to play for them.
But let's be fair to Alan, you played until much longer, even though it was non-league and maybe
I was a left back. That's
you played for much longer than most other players.
If I was a centre forward, I would have packed in like him.
How old was you when you played your very last game?
43.
Serious?
Yeah.
That takes some doing, doesn't it?
How hard did you find it to retire? Because the fact you played till 43 implies you loved football, loved playing.
Yes.
So to then replace that with something else thereafter, how hard did you find that transition into?
I don't know what you I replaced it with.
Okay, so difficult.
Yeah, but I still play.
Sure.
Football.
Yeah.
I still play walking football. Mm. I do whatever. And, you know, I'm not saying we try and raise money for whatever, but the standard has got to be, my standard, John's standard, is right up there. So every game I play is like I'm playing for Liverpool.
Yeah.
And it's so it should be. I can't be anything else, you know, because anything else is, you know, I can't.
I get that.
I have to be. I don't have to be the best. I just have to be as honest as I can and do the right thing and tell people if they've done wrong. John will tell you.
That's obsessed by them and life in general.
I'm like that all the time in football.
Mm.
And even when I say football in today's world, I think to myself, what are you doing that for? Why are you playing it there? Why are you doing that? Mm. I'm playing the game for them. Yeah, you know,
it's
in my blood. You're right. It's in my blood. I can't get away from it. But it's driving me on all the time.
Looking back, I mean, I think you gave us the answer earlier. But of all the medals and all the trophies that you won, which one would you say is maybe the one that you are most proud of in your career?
Mm. Well, I think. If you are the champions of Europe, then you are the best. And we then had to go to Japan and play out there, you know, and I thought to myself, just be what you are. You can't be anything else, can you? And I honestly believed that Liverpool were good for me. And hopefully, I was good for them.
No question there. Yeah, no.
I was about to say that. Easily answered.
I think.
Yep. And that's a good time for the quiz.
I think so. Yes. Are you ready? So we got six questions. And the reason is we say we won it six times. So we got six questions about your career, which James is going to put to you now. No pressure, but in the lead is Lucas, isn't he?
Lucas, and last time it was
John Achterberg. Did he do
decent?
Five out of six. So you've got to get the whole lot. So
just get the answers out.
Yeah, tenner.
Tenner. Cheap, that. Yeah.
James is the Bradley Walsh of our podcast.
Brown envelope.
No. Don't go there.
Hey. Right, number one. Alan, who said this about you? If this lad doesn't play for England, I'll throw myself in the Mersey when the tide is out.
Bob Paisley.
Correct.
Well done, mate.
Number two.
On your Liverpool debut against QPR in 78 that we talked about earlier, you set up the opening goal in a 2-1 win. Who scored that goal?
Steve Highway.
Kenny Dalglish.
Oh.
I'll have a drink.
How many goals, number three, how many goals did you score for Liverpool in total? Was it 18, 20 or 22?
You're not including Champions League finals. I'm going to go for, what did you say the middle one was?
20.
What did you say the first one?
18, 20 or 22.
I know it's round there somewhere.
It's definitely one of the three.
It's sharp. I have to give him that. Just your instinct.
Let's go for 20.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Come on. Number four.
I can have another drink.
Number four. Who did you make your England debut against in 1984?
You should get.
Why?
Because it's your debut, isn't it? You should remember that.
Do you want multiple choice?
Hang on. I only had two caps. gonna go. Northern Ireland.
Correct.
Well,
yes.
Well done. You're flying.
Right, number five. You famously scored the winning penalty in the 84 European Cup final shootout in Rome. Who missed Liverpool's first penalty that night?
Steve Nicol.
Correct.
Jesus.
Yes.
Sorry. Get the drinks in, please.
This is equal the best.
Five out of six.
This is dead hard.
I'm about to
tweak this one slightly because we've talked about it a little bit. But
tweet or tweak?
Just changed it a little
bit. Okay.
So your final Liverpool appearance was against Oxford United in September 1985. What was the score in that game? Correct. Brilliant, Al.
Oh,
quality of that.
Brilliant, Al.
Thank you very much. Fantastic, fantastic. I've loved every minute and I'm having a little, an afternoon session. Hey!
Well,
very nice.
Just like to thank Alan, you've been a star as always.
Thanks very much, John. Absolutely pleasure. Thank you.
And Peter and James, it's been a great podcast. I really enjoyed it as always. And we look forward to next month now. Don't know what it is yet. Quite yet, but it's been boss. Well done, Al. Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.